Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome retired Navy Captain Jim Lovell, retired Air Force Colonel Frank Borman. We all got hooked on airplanes sometime as a kid. Frank, how did it start for you?
Well, model airplanes and an early flight in a Waco, open cockpit Waco with my dad when I was 5 years old. But model airplanes, I think, got me into aviation more.
You just kind of triggered when you saw the little the wind-up. Did you do that?
We did that. Started with rubber band models and then gasoline models. And there weren't any of those... you know, electronic games, and it was more hands-on mechanical things.
What was it about, for all of it, what is it about this business of going up in an airplane that so grabs us?
I've thought about that a lot. I've come to the conclusion it's the freedom you have. You know, you're up there, and it's really... between you and the Lord, and the sky is your limit. It's wonderful.
Jim, what about you? When did you get hooked, started?
Well, you know, both Frank and I were born in 1928, and what happened in 1927 but Lindbergh? And I was one of those kids growing up in the 30s that really loved, you know, aviation. We built solid models and things like that. My uncle was an early naval aviator, number 58, as a matter of fact.
Oh, wow.
And when he came to the house to talk, he'd talk about the early airplanes and the old aircraft carriers and things like that. So I got hooked. But I was not fortunate enough to be able to get aviation at all. I didn't fly it. I didn't get in any airplanes at all. Only one time when I was about 8 years old that the company pilot came around that my father worked for, and it took me on a little turn. So I had... no idea, but I wanted to go into aviation. And when I graduated from school, I went down to Pensacola to start flying from the Naval Academy. And so it was a complete beginning for me, as was Frank Lord, you know, at an early age.
Yeah, so when was your first solo? When did you learn to fly, Frank?
I soloed when I was 15 in Taylor Craft in Tucson, Arizona. And the interesting thing about it was, this was in the 40s, early 40s, my instructor, even at that time, was a lady. You know, you never forget your first instructor, and she was a wonderful, patient lady. She needed to be patient.
Frank, when was your first flight that you remember?
Well, the first flight I remembered was in this airplane right over here. Now, you remember, I've never really flown much. I've been in a couple commercial airlines as a passenger. My instructor was called back in for the Korean War. He was a Packard salesman, and he was going to take me up in the first flight, and he was going to show me the various airfields around Pensacola. So I sat back there and went around there, and he says, "You see all those? That's where you're going to be going." He said, "Is your seatbelt tight?" You know, and I said, "Yes." "Why?" And for that, boom, 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 boom. And when I got back down the first time, he looked at me. I wasn't about to say anything. I felt awful. I crawled out of that cockpit, and I got back down there. And he says, "What did you think? You still want to fly?" Oh, yes, sir.
So how did you get over that? I mean, we know the stories about Hoover. And the fact, when Bob started to fly, he got really sick, and he taught himself acrobatics to get over it, and he did. Goodness knows he got over it. But what about you? How fast did you get over it?
Well, through flight training, we didn't do all that kind of stuff because we were just learning to fly. So I had to learn, you know, the normal operations of the airplane and how to land and all that. So I really didn't feel that bad. It was only when he suddenly came... And when you're sitting in the back seat, you know, when you're flying, that's one thing. You don't think about that. When you're sitting in the back seat, just sitting there, well, that's another thing.
Yeah. What was the route for you to get to training? School, and what was the track?
Well, I went to West Point, and then there wasn't an Air Force Academy when I graduated, so 25% of our class went into the Air Force. And I chose the Air Force. That's why I went to West Point, to try to get in the Air Force. There wasn't, as Jim said, after World War II, there was a huge surplus of pilots. and tried everywhere to get, couldn't get a on, but I got in the Air Force in 1950, and I started out one of those also at a T-6 at Sherman, Texas, and from there I went back out to Williams for jets. But yeah, that was the course I took.
Why is this airplane such a good trainer?
Well, I think it's very stable, and it's easy to maintain. It's been around for years and years. It's easy to fly. You get accustomed to it right away, and so I just fell into it when I started flying it.
So Frank, you go to primary, right?
Well, it was basic then. They didn't have primary. We started out in this thing.
Oh, yeah.
This was primary for both of us.
Yeah. Well, they call it basic and then advanced. Yeah. The Air Force changed the nomenclature.
So your next airplane was after...
The next airplane was a T-28.
Right.
And then the transition there's a lot of them out here. But we had the Air Force one with a 7-cylinder engine. It was a dog. The Navy had a better T-28 than the Air Force,
yeah,
did you?
Yeah, we did.
And then we went from the T-28 to the F-80, P-80 back then.
So how was that experience? Describe the P-80 experience.
Well, that was back in an interesting time in the Air Force jets. As I recall, you had to overhaul the jet engines every 25 hours. And we had a lot of exciting times with engines not performing properly. But the program was very rigorous. About 40% of our class washed out. There was our instructors were almost all World War II pilots, fighter pilots, and their outlook on life was still shaped by the war. And it was an exciting time.
Jim, what was your track? Did you go right from high school to college to to Annapolis? What was your route to get there?
Well, high school, and then the Holloway program, I went to Wisconsin for 2 years. Then I got into the academy. I went into flight training, got my wings. Then I flew SNJs because I went right down to flight training. And my advanced training was in Hellcats. Anybody still remember what a Hellcat is? I don't think there's one out here in the line.
Well, I think anybody. Have you seen Hellcats out here? No, not today.
These are all leftover World War II planes.
Yeah.
And I can recall flying that airplane. We've had a lot of oil was leaking and, you know, everything. It smelled like an old airplane. And but I did carrier quals in this airplane for my primary or basic. And then when I got to Hellcats, I went back out to the Monterey, which was the duty aircraft carrier off of actually this is down in Texas now, down in Kingsland, and I did carrier quals in the F-6. We still had them, and then in Kingsland we transferred over to jets for the first time, and the first planes we had were F-80s.
And you had F-80s in the Navy?
Well, they were just for training. And they were very short fuel, as I recall. And I can remember getting into the F-80, and I pulled the canopy over, and my head went down like this. And I could hardly look over the sunscreen just to fly the airplane. And then finally we got T-33s, and I got my jet training in that. And that's how
I... Did they have tail hooks on the T-33s?
No, there were no tail hooks. We didn't go to the ship in the T-33.
When you carrier qual, could you qual at night or only during the day?
Well, most of the time it was during the day. But for my care quals and basic, you know, six landings in the daytime in the T-6, and then for my advanced in the the F-8s was six landings again, daylight, all daylight. I became a night fighter. Which I didn't even know I was going to become. When I got my wings in 54, I was assigned to a squadron out in California, Moffett Field. And when I arrived at the squadron, as a nugget, basically, I found out that there was 122 naval aviators and 800 enlisted in this squadron. I go, well, and then I found out that the squadron actually developed night fighter teams. This was in 1954-55, and the carriers suddenly decided that they needed people to fly at night off of aircraft carriers, because during World War II, most of the flights were all daytime. The carrier was a daytime weapon, essentially, and at nighttime everybody would go watch the movie. But that was changing in the Korean War, and so I got assigned to a nighttime team of five pilots, four airplanes, 30 enlisted, and we flew F-2H3s, Banshees with radar and that. And so that's how I, so my first deployment on the Shangri-La was as a night fighter. And here I thought I was just a day aviator.
And straight deck, right, carrier?
No, fortunately for me, I think, that's why I'm still alive, this was the first angled deck carrier on the West Coast. It was a modified World War II carrier. The Shangri-La was originally straight deck. And they had one on the East Coast, one on the West Coast. And so it was a really a godsend as far as going out. We were the first people to have an angled deck carrier.